started?
Yeah, we're rolling.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Just to get this out of the way, because everybody's probably noticed, we're on SM58s.
So
yeah. You'll probably notice a huge dip in audio quality.
Well, you won't, no, because it's... Here's the thing. It's a lesson. We're starting with a lesson today.
Oh, good.
It's not about your fancy equipment. It's about your ideas. And what a show we've got for you today.
How are you doing, Dan?
Some of the finest ideas. Yeah, good. I was going to mention, I got this one at a car boot sale.
Right.
As well. £30.
Hey, okay. So we've literally, just to say, but to give you a bit of context here, listeners, we've got a producer arriving in exactly 29 minutes.
Something like that, yeah.
So this podcast is not going to be over 29 minutes.
Well, it might have a hard stop. Well, he could be arriving in 32, but he's to say.
He might be part of the podcast.
Usually quite early, yeah.
How you doing, Dan?
All right. Yeah, good. Yeah, man.
What do you want to talk about this week?
I don't know. It's been on vacation for. Well, I said went to a stag do. It's been to Norway for the weekend.
Let's.
Let's wait.
Yeah, obviously all the standard stuff. The Norwegians have a similar. I was told that Norwegians do stag do's a bit differently. They don't. Well, this one wasn't any different.
You were all naked and weeping by 5 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No. There was a costume. There was alcohol. Would you believe it?
Okay. Right. Do you want to start? I've got something to start with.
Kick us off, Matthew.
So there's a clip. We'll put this on the show. There's a clip on Instagram that's been doing the rounds, which is Glyn Johns. For anyone that doesn't know, Glyn Johns, amazing 60s.
If you don't know, just turn the podcast off now.
Basically, you know, the joke is that, like, George Martin produced the Beatles and Glyn Johns produced everybody else and the Beatles.
Right.
It's just like literally, he produced everybody. Anyway, so there's a clip of him that's been...
Sorry, just, I think the foam in that mic is a little bit...
Should I go back a bit?
A little bit long in the tooth. So just be aware of that.
Yeah. A clip of Glyn Johns going around and essentially saying that as technology has... Well, he wouldn't say improved, but say has advanced.
Yeah.
People are playing together less. So music used to be people recording together and now people are recording separately. And essentially, the long and short of it is that, like, music has lost all of its emotion.
Okay.
There's, like, no emotion left in music.
And this is something he said recently. Hang on. Is he still around?
He's still around, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And,
so he said this. Lately,
he said, "Well, it like four people over the last week, reposted the clip." And I've been thinking about it, and I'm thinking, on the one hand, yeah, but on the other hand, like no,
yeah.
Like because I guess it depends, right, on what metric you judge emotion in music.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if music to you is the meaning, the actual meaning in music to you is the reaction of people playing together.
Yeah.
Then sure. You know, techno is not going to be your thing.
No.
But I was just thinking, God, there's so much music I love at the moment.
Mm.
Like hip hop isn't people playing together.
No.
and it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
And like so many records that like,
well, as well,
Caroline Polachek, the last 1975 records, so many records that I deeply dig at the moment.
Mm.
Are like, well, I've not been playing together, and they rock. Mm. But then there are, but Big Thief is also good.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I think a lot of people were reposting this as like, oh yeah, it's kind of not what it used to be, and it isn't what it used to be.
Yeah.
But is that bad?
Why should music stay the same as it was in the 60s?
I know I want your take.
Yeah. I think, well, there's a couple of things. There's another post which we might talk about in a minute, which is another sort of death of music.
The James Blake one?
Yeah, we'll chat about that in a second.
All right, okay.
Maybe we'll weave that in a minute.
Put that on ice.
No, we'll put it on defrost.
yeah.
We'll put that in the microwave for five minutes. I completely agree with you. And also there's music which, you know, there's so many people I'm not one of them usually, but occasionally, you know, in I haven't done it in a few years, but you know, the whole clubbing experience, the whole let's go and listen to house music for 9 hours thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, some people use that with the enhancement of certain substances.
Extracurricular.
Yeah. But also people go and do it and don't drink, don't imbibe any other substances, and just dance to the beat for however many hours and have an amazing time.
Yeah.
So, and that is, that doesn't, you can't just get in a old warehouse with a bunch of people and it's a bit hot and dance to nothing, you know? But like, you know, and that's not, I wouldn't even say it's not my cup of tea. I like electronic music in general, you know, quite like it. Certain genres are. I like the weirder stuff. But if you're in a club and there's a house DJ, so I'm in. I'm fully in. I never listen to it anywhere else.
I guess maybe like the point of what he was saying though was that if you listen to a record from 1970, we can't make music like that anymore. We just don't. You know what I mean? I think the culture's different.
Mm.
The playing is different.
Okay.
The sonics are different.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, yeah.
Mm.
But to another extent, well, so what? It was a kind of a different time.
Yeah. I don't know what would be the point of making something in that way.
Yeah,
except for the fact that you would very consciously place limitations on yourself in order to do it.
Yeah.
Which, as long as you're kind of proficient at your, you've got to be proficient at your instrument. And there's no shortcuts on that end.
And that's still really relevant.
Yeah.
And I also think...
And also, there's proficient musicians everywhere.
Like, do you know what I mean? Exactly,
yeah.
Dan.
Yeah.
I just thought, okay, how many good musicians do I know?
Yeah.
And the answer is, like, lots.
Yeah.
There's lots of people who are just bad motherfuckers. I mean, we've had them in here, Dan.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the drummers we've had in this year, I'm like, Jesus, you're good.
Yeah. Well, just, I think, maybe it's because we're perhaps working with a sort of higher caliber of musician these days, dare I say.
How dare you?
But let's say when we started, we were charging £150 for both of us.
Yeah, we were a bargain.
We still encounter some good musicians. We encountered some other musicians who, let's say,
they were learning.
They were learners. Yeah. We were on a journey.
They had the L plates on. They
exactly.
came in with the L plates. Which end do you hit this?
Yeah. But also maybe this is the kind of, I'm gonna attempt to segue into just introduce the other thing we're talking about. The opportunity now for anybody to make music is, you know, the barrier to entry to make something, a medium through which to express yourself, so low now. You know, I was chatting to someone the other day about, I think somebody phoned and they were asking about work placement or internship or whatever, and they said, how many of these people are actually kind of qualified?
Yeah.
And I was like, kind of all of them, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't, I think we used to say it doesn't really matter if they don't know anything about music making at all, as long as they got the right attitude. My thinking's evolved a little bit on that. By the way, everyone, there still isn't a job. There's no job.
Stop
Sorry.
Sending your CV.
There's no job.
What
I was going to say was, though, I don't actually personally care if someone's done a course or not, but if in a hypothetical situation where someone was going to come and work for us, I would expect that they knew what Phantom Power was, or knew how to plug in a mic and an interface and such like.
Totally.
You know, because the information is freely available.
But on the other end of the spectrum, I would say, just sort of circling back slightly to the point that we started with.
Mm.
The entry to making something is really low. Anyone can have GarageBand and make something.
Yeah.
But I would say the standard of stuff at the top is just very, 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 very high. There's lots of fucking very, very good music out there.
Yes.
Made by extraordinarily talented people.
Mm. And there's a lot of toss as
well. There's a lot of toss. Well, there's this, you know, if you, what's the thing? Yeah, I'm going to segue in really nicely.
You segue in. I'll read this out in a minute, but yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's something, I'm going to make up a number, but it's something like this. It's something like, you know, 14,000 songs are uploaded to Spotify every day. I've totally made that number up.
I thought it was like every second or something. Yes. Yeah.
But it's a lot, you know, but I guess that the competition for our attentions is, you know, the stuff, you know, like most stuff on Spotify. Yeah. This isn't even vaguely caught. If 1400, 14,000, whatever, if there's all this number of pieces of music being uploaded to Spotify every day, most of them are just not going to be very good.
Most of them are not going to be very good. And there's also, even if you set aside the stuff that's not very good, there's probably more songs, pieces of music out there that are actually good.
Yeah.
You know, so there is definitely a competition for our attention.
Dan, segue.
James, what have you got to say on this?
James is James Blake.
Oh, thanks.
That's a really accurate, that's a really accurate impression. I'd like to apologise to James Blake and anyone associated with him.
I should have brought a little hand puppet, a little James Blake hand puppet. If anyone wants to make a James Blake hand puppet, the address is on the website.
Okay.
I'm not going to read it out.
Yeah.
James Blake said this 4 days ago on Instagram. Let's discuss. I think these are tweets or something. Yeah. There's just three bits to it. Three tweets. Something I keep seeing is if you're lucky enough to go viral, just use the exposure to generate income some other way. End quote. Musicians should be able to generate income via their music. Do you want good music or do you want what you paid for? If we want quality music, somebody is going to have to pay for it. Streaming services don't pay properly. Labels want a bigger cut than ever and just sit and wait for you to go viral. TikTok doesn't pay properly and touring is getting prohibitively expensive for most artists. And by the way, since it's cheaper to produce fast, synthetic music to drop on streaming every week to capitalize on the strengths of the model, watch how the model is preparing you for AI-generated music that pays musicians nothing at all. Well, discuss.
There's a lot there.
The first page of that.
Yeah. But I mean, I literally thought every line of that statement is like, wow, there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
I mean,
Welcome to our 10-part special.
I think what he's done is quite articulately kind of consolidated everyone's worries in a tweet. You know, there's a lot there.
You can tell he's fucking pissed off and there's a lot right
now. There's a lot of things that I agree, you know.
Yeah.
I think he's just pointed out this is what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, God, where do we start with that?
I would say, here's a thought around it to just kind of frame, perhaps. I think commercial music, because forget when the only time you could hear music was if you went to see an orchestra, but recorded music has always had quite a strong relationship with its medium. By that, I mean when, the concept of making an album, which we still talk about all the time these days, we don't need to be making albums at all.
No.
An album was something that was a collection of songs that fitted on a record. You know, I don't think someone may correct me on this, but I don't think albums were around before, you know, before the 33 RPM record.
No, so are you going with the fact of, like, you know, in 1960, singles were the thing. So the music industry was generating 3-minute songs because that was what...
Exactly.
That was
fit
into the medium.
Yeah, that was kind of what was expected. That was also the time when, you know, nobody gave a shit about whether people wrote their own songs then, you know. And then there was this period in the 90s, particularly if you were into like grunge music or something, when it was like they don't even write their own songs, you know?
I always thought that was, I just thought the whole Noel Gallagher thing of like, doesn't even write his own fucking songs. It's the same. Well, neither did like Sinatra. Neither did Elvis. Like,
stole it all from the Beatles.
I mean, obviously, you know, Noel is a fucking great writer.
Yeah.
You know, obviously.
He actually is.
Yeah, and it's his like strongest suit. But I mean, I there's so many great artists who, you know, Aretha Franklin didn't write a lot of her own music. Does that lessen her as an artist? I would say no. Anyway,
I don't think so. But I mean, when I was a teenager, I as much as I didn't want to agree with anything Noel Gallagher said,
yeah,
because I wasn't. It was not like I was Blur versus Oasis. I was more just like both of them fuck off. However, it's Blur now.
Yeah, yeah, but, right. Let's not open that point, can of worms.
Let's not open. Yeah, if you want to, it's podcast at urchinstudios.co.uk. This week's question:
Blur or Oasis?
But yeah, the medium is the medium was vinyl records, and then it was cassette, which I don't think cassette had a huge impact on like you know. So what I'm saying is like a vinyl record. On a 12-inch, you can fit 45 minutes of music or so. Yeah. So you would collect together 45 minutes worth of music. And that was really important, particularly because when our parents were growing up, I think unless you had loads of cash, it was like, okay, I'm going to buy this record, you buy that record,
yeah.
And then when we go to a party later, you know, everyone brings the couple of records that the albums that they've bought and can afford. So I think it was really important that you gave people kind of value for money in that sense.
Circle this back to the James Blake thing.
I'm coming back to it. So then when CDs came out, albums kind of got longer. That's what I was saying. Cassettes, I would say, created playlists.
Because you could curate your own,
exactly,
right?
You could start to create your own thing, and obviously mini discs really were the pinnacle.
I
love the mini discs.
It's good.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so now we're in the streaming age, and we've got the available. You know, it's more or less every piece of music that's been recorded nowadays. Some stuff you go, it's not there. Okay. By and large,
apart from Joni Mitchell and Neil Young,
right? that's exactly. So that's because you haven't bought Pino Player.
I'm on Spotify.
This is this week's sponsor, the Pino Player. So the medium has always influenced the art. That's the point I'm trying to make. And as a listener, whether you like it or not, I think on the whole, it's a really good thing that you can just be like, oh, I fancy listening to, I'm walking in a park, really fancy listening to whatever, Smells Like Teen Spirit or whatever. And I can just take my phone out of my pocket and I can call upon the music that I wish to listen to. And it's available. That's a very powerful thing.
But to go back to James, I think kind of, one of the cruxes of the point I think James Blake is making is people aren't paid for music. And I sort of think that's obviously true in that there's a lot of people making a lot of money from streaming, which seem to be the majors and also seem to be the companies themselves.
It was tech companies.
Tech companies are doing really well. And
I think the thing about tech companies, and this is, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, but generally I don't think tech companies are run or even particularly maybe staffed. This might be a little bit unfair, but someone can correct me, by people who are true art lovers.
Yeah.
You know?
Who knows? So just get back to my point though, is that streaming doesn't pay a lot of artists. However, there have been some real winners from streaming, and I'm looking toward those independent artists who have managed to build up a following. Take Bruno Major, for example, who is just one of the huge winners.
Yeah.
Got dropped, put out his own thing, did it independently.
Yeah.
It started streaming. Then he had a song that went viral on TikTok.
Mm.
And everything that he did, all the exposure that he got, everything came back to him in terms of money, in terms of all the revenue that was generating came straight back to him. And I just think, well, I'm not disagreeing with what James Blake's saying.
Because
I think if you were signed to a major, that everything he says there is almost certainly true.
Yeah. I think in some ways, the fact that there's a lot of artists struggling to make a career out of music, let me be very clear here. I'm only saying this is I wonder if.
Yeah.
Because I don't actually know. I'm not sure. I mean, I'd love everyone to make a living from their art. You know, I think that'd be fantastic. I think the world would probably be a better place. But within the kind of current capitalist paradigm, there's only so much attention available.
I'm going to just pick you up on something.
Mm.
I wouldn't say that's a capitalist problem. I would say that's a problem of if everyone has the technology to create something, there's only so much room in the market for so much music.
Yeah.
If
everyone didn't have to go to work for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, they could spend more time consuming art. That's kind of. And also, you know, and in terms of your sort of mental bandwidth, like I can't sit and listen to records. I can't sit and listen to new music every day.
I agree. I agree. But even so, I think the sheer volume of things that are being made and uploaded.
Yeah.
Even if your full-time job.
Yeah.
I think that we tend to listen. Most of us tend to listen to music, find something.
Mm.
And, you know, a good song is like a treasure trove. Yeah,
it's addictive, isn't it?
You can have 100 listens and 100 different great experiences on that one piece of music.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that we're selective. I mean, I do agree that that's not a problem. I'm not sure that's the problem of the kind of the capitalist model, like you suggested.
No.
It's more a problem of just volume and attention.
How about the sort of the capitalist model requires that you make a living from your art?
Well, that's a problem.
That's the problem. But what I was going to say was, I think the majority of people making music, probably whichever decade you look at, I would say the majority, might be a bigger majority now, but the majority have fallen by the wayside and not made a living from it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about when we started the studio, that was people were very much still pressing up CDs to sell at gigs, I suppose, more than anything.
Yeah.
But your overhead in terms of getting your music out there was, okay, so you have to go into a studio. You can't do it at home.
Yeah.
Technology wasn't ready. Not as freely available. So you had to spend money on studio time and your transport and all the associated costs and whatnot, maybe taking some time off work, whatever. And then you had to press up 1,000 CDs because that was the minimum
amount.
The minimum amount in order to gain access to the ability to distribute your music.
And also, if you wanted...
Your own CDs, but
if you wanted a sort of professional finish, you weren't going to do that with a laptop at home as well.
No, yeah, it wasn't. I'm sure there were some geniuses. Obviously like people like Aphex Twin.
Like one in a billion, those people.
You reckon Glyn Johns has ever listened to Aphex Twin?
I don't know, he should.
He fucking
hates it. I'm not disagreeing with anything James Blake has said.
No, I don't think I am either.
However, I would say this. I started in the music industry in the year 2000, which is like LimeWire time.
Yeah.
So the music was facing what felt like an existential crisis, like a really big one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, shit,
Yeah.
Nobody's paying for music.
Mm.
We're not making any money. No one's, people aren't buying CDs. And it really felt like all of the people that I was around who were like my age now, the musicians in 2000 who had grown up in the 80s and the 90s and were in their 40s were like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Because everything's fucked.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem as bad now. I'm not saying that now doesn't have its challenges, because it does.
Yeah.
But back in 2000, if you were a musician or a band, the kind of independent route that's available now just didn't seem to exist.
Yeah.
You needed a major label record deal. You had to have Radio 1 play. You just had to go through this rigid system.
The DIY, quote unquote, DIY route that we have now, which is actually DIY, because the kind of artists can and often do become their own press agent and whatever. But it's like the people who do that well do it well. And it's not like, they're not like kind of photocopying. You know, when I think of like DIY music, I think of like photocopying album sleeves and stuff and burning your own CDs.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm reminded of something very important though. Which is a graph that I saw, I think, at a Christmas party. Remember Christmas?
I remember Christmas.
Yeah. But at a music industry Christmas party, there was a presentation from Chris Cook, who's a kind of music industry, he's like a consultant. But he showed a graph of how much music, I can't remember what the measure is, I'm going to have to go and look it up. But the amount of music in the music industry. And the graph was going up. Graph's been going up for a couple of years.
What do you mean the amount of music, the volume of music?
The revenue, the value of the industry.
Yeah, I was going to make that point of like, there's more money now around than there was in 2000. Not as much as there was in 1982.
No. Well, yeah, but I mean, there is more to the point. I mean, yes, but more to the point, it's been increasing for a couple of years. From admittedly a slightly depressed point.
Yeah.
So there is, the money is there. Where's it going?
I know. I mean, there's definitely, I think James Bay's point is that like, we definitely have a distribution problem.
Yeah.
And we do.
Yeah.
We absolutely do.
Mm.
And also, I mean, approximately 2 minutes 36 seconds left. So let's talk about AI in there.
Yes.
The other thing you alluded to though was what effect is AI going to have?
AI music.
I mean, it's just going to fucking have a huge effect.
Yeah.
And nobody knows what that's going to be. I'm doing some library music at the moment, which I've not done before, and I'm quite enjoying it actually. And I'm doing it for a friend. A friend's asked me to do a few bits, and I'm doing it. And I think, well, that's probably not going to be there in 10 years.
That's, for me, that's the bit that I can see going first.
So I'm going to get in there now.
And to get in there, yeah. Because as well, like, just to kind of finish up, I think we should pick up these points in a couple of weeks.
To your point though, Dan, we could do a 10-part special on that James, line by line, from that James Blake quote, because every sentence is like a huge issue.
Mm. Yeah, but maybe my parting thought is that it's the songs and the music are important, but also the story of an artist is important.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like, really important.
It's so important, and that often is what frames the context of a song.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you can have a sort of AI Taylor Swift going to synthetic Super Bowl games with a synthetic boyfriend.
You might be able to have a synthetic.
Synthetically.
Could you have a synthetic Daft Punk? Because Daft Punk's whole shtick, right, was we're humans, but we're not actually. We're robots. This is all kind of mechanical. Kraftwerk started the idea.
It might not be possible to be a mysterious artist.
But maybe the whole conceit with Daft Punk
in the future
is that like, we know that it's human beings pretending to be robots.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's robots
pretending to be humans,
pretending to be robots.
Well,
we know they're, you know, you know what I mean? It's sort of slightly different conceit.
The first person to well, the first person to program the AI that does the first job of robot pretending to be human will be massive, probably, as long as it's good.
Robot pretending to be human.
Yeah, the inverted Daft Punk. Right. The first time it happens, it'll be novel.
Well, but it's already happened. We talked about it with like the sort of McCartney doing singing God Only Knows, which is like shit.
But that's not new. You need original song, original production, original lyrics, original emotion, you know.
And that's the timer.
Yeah. Next week, Glyn Johns will be joining us discussing whether you can synthesize emotion. He's not.
He's nice.
Are we going to do it? Yeah. By the way, apologies this week. It was my being away at the weekend, which has delayed the release of this podcast.
No one gives a shit, Dan. No.
We'll do it on Monday or Tuesday, probably, next week.
Yeah.
And I think there might be a couple of weeks off, because I'm away and
I'm
then
away.
You're away.
Yeah, we might take a sort of Easter sabbatical.
Yeah, exactly.
Sabbatical's a year. Is it sabbatical? We won't take a year off. You're not that lucky.
No, it's not like... Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.